Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I am Chris Lucian, and my co-host is Austin Chadwick. And today we have Kieran Murphy to talk about mob programming in undergraduate CS classes, how he's applied, the feedback he's received, and what he's learned. So before we get into that, Kieran, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you. My name is Kieran Murphy. I'm based in Chicago, and my pronouns are he, him. I've been a consultant for ThoughtWorks for 7 years. I work for ThoughtWorks. That's my main job. I've been an XP practitioner throughout my career. I'll share a little bit more in a minute here about how I got into mobbing. But another thing I do is that I teach some computer science courses at Loyola University Chicago, and I've been doing that since fall semester of 2021. And I've been using mob programming in those courses since spring of 2022. So I did one semester without mobbing, and then I kind of did some retooling, and I've been using mob programming in there ever since.
Well, that's interesting. So, switching. What made you switch from kind of non-mobbed classes to mobbed classes? What was that like?
Yeah, let me tell you, I'll give a little background on how I got into this whole thing. I'm not an academic, obviously. You know, I'm a consultant, I'm a practitioner, I'm an engineer. And I would say I even made an intentional shift away from that. I have a master's in computer science. When I was finishing that, I thought maybe I'd continue in this thing, but got into it, reached a point where I realized, okay, this academic part of my life is over. I don't have it in me to study anymore and do that kind of thing. And I wanted to get to work. Well, I've always been a coach, trainer. I think that's part of the XP lifestyle, definitely part of consulting. 2021, a contact of mine, Dr. Udayan Das, was a professor at Loyola University. He announced that he was leaving the university to go to another posting and was looking for an instructor who could take over computer science 170 and computer science 271. I would say those are basically your first two computer science courses. So walking in with no background at all, you take 170 and then you follow it up with 171. The titles of those, 170 is called Intro to Object-Oriented Programming, but I'd say it'd probably be better called Intro to Programming in an object-oriented language because we use Java. And 271 is much more interesting. It's data structures and algorithms, which has always been, even as a student, was always something I really enjoyed learning and practicing. So at any rate, Dr. Das was leaving, looking for an instructor. I reached out. We had some talks. He recommended me. And the next thing I knew, I was a part-time instructor at Loyola University with these two classes. And these are 8-week classes. So I am mostly not teaching traditional undergrads. These are more what I might call career changer folks. A lot of folks who have an undergrad in a different topic and have been working for a while. But in any class, I do get a couple of folks who are just, you know, sophomore year of their undergraduate experience and they're taking this course, either because it applies to their major or sometimes it's a science credit that they can fulfill. But at any rate, my courses are 8 weeks. They're under the School for Continuing and Professional Studies. Each course, I'll get about 15 students. And your question was, how did I get to mobbing?
Yeah.
So my first semester, you know, I took this class from Dr. Das, and he had done all the hard work of, you know, here's how you teach these topics over 8 weeks. Here are assignments that are applicable. Here's how to use the textbook. We have a great online textbook called ZyBook, which I'm a huge fan of. I took all that. I started doing it. I didn't really know what I was doing. And with 15 students, I was really trying to teach kind of the way that I had experienced this when I was a student. So something that worked for me was I liked when the professor would do coding in class so that I could see, you know, mostly then I was coding by myself. So I did a lot of coding, live coding in class, and that worked well for me. But by the end of the first semester, I figured out it wasn't doing much for the students.
Okay.
You know, watching me code was giving them some hints that I might see in the code they submitted to me, but it wasn't really helping them with the experience that I was hoping it would give. And I also realized that I was dealing with 15 individuals interpreting this stuff, and I was having a lot of one-on-one time with different students, kind of having different conversations, because something I was learning there was that people learn differently too. So after that first semester, I had already been doing mob programming, and I thought, I think that's a way that I can corral all these people around one thing. And a couple of things stuck out to me that I thought mob programming could help with. One was getting everybody onto the same page. So like I said, people learn differently. It's really hard for me to carry on and figure out the individual language for all of these people. But when we mob, there's a little bit of coding and a lot of conversation going on. So it got that one person who was sharing their desktop being the typist would get the experience of typing the code, but everybody else got the experience of talking about how they were understanding the problem, how we might solve the problem, and talking to each other about it. And I had a feeling, and this has played out, that that seems to really help people understand things and develop a common understanding, just like what I find when we mob at work.
Yeah.
So I had, that was one motive. My other motive was I wanted them to be writing code, because that other observation I made where they're not getting much out of watching me type code, and I'm not getting much out of typing code for them. But if I can get them typing the code, that's really, they need the practice. They need to develop that skill. So mob programming was a way to try that as well.
That old pair programming practice, the driver and the watcher. Okay. Well, so you shifted, did the structure of the assignments change at all? Was there anything that
question,
like fundamentally had to be different based on the original content versus the new content?
Yeah, good, really good question. And I was thinking about how to share that too. This did turn into a retooling of the class. Because, all right, I want them to mob programming class, but I need something for them to work on. Well, we had this other issue of they do a lot of assignments. In the Comp 170 class, they do an assignment every week for 8 weeks. That's a lot. In the 271 class, they do 4 assignments over 8 weeks. I noticed in my first semester that people were having a lot of anxiety about the programming assignments, understandably. To just give them, you know, here's a problem, go write a program for this. When folks are brand new, they don't even know how to begin. They don't know how to organize their file system. They don't know how to start a new project. They don't know really anything, and you don't expect them to, because this is Comp 170 or 271. I retooled the assignments so that instead of just saying, here, write a program about this, now I give them a Java project. And I just use Gradle to create as close to a out of the box standard Java project. I build what I want them to finish. So now I give them an unfinished application and their assignment is make the test pass. So I give them a working Java application, but when they get it, they run it and some test pass with nice helpful messages that say like to do, implement this method, or, you know, to do, make this bit of functionality work. So what I liked there was that that let me deliver it and receive it through GitHub rather than packaging something up. You know, I give them an assignment and then they give me back a zip file with some unique file structure that I have to figure out or something. This way, it's more the way that we exchange code as professional software professionals through, you know, going through GitHub. So I changed the assignments that way. And then that also let me change the way they submit it. So now they submit it back to me as a pull request, and I can give them feedback on it through the pull request. Where this helped with mobbing was, you know, that first part where people have a lot of anxiety about the assignments. They don't know how to get started. Well, I also have a 3-hour class session every week, and I was having a lot of anxiety trying to fill. I can't lecture for 3 hours, you know, I'm not, this is where it's clear that I'm not really an academic, but I could programming was a really helpful thing to do. So what I shifted the class around so that in the second hour of the class, we work on code together. That's where we mob. And when it's a week where we're going to start a new assignment, we just start the assignment together in class. So part of reorganizing the assignments was that I gave each assignment is worth 75 points. The whole course is only 500 points. That was another thing I kind of simplified. But in each assignment, it's organized so that there's a small piece that's worth 5 points. And we'll do that together. So kind of, you know, the first one, they're going to do some, it's about sorting algorithms. So they're going to do some sorting algorithms, but it starts off with a basic hello world. And we do that together in class. And in that environment, it'll take the better part of an hour to do that simple part. But what is good there is that that way everybody gets their hands into the code. Everybody has an understanding of what the problem they're trying to solve. And it's really helpful for me because I can reinforce that, you know, the goal is to make the test pass. So write a little code, run the tests, and reinforce the things where I've seen people kind of, you know, get into some trouble. When the code doesn't compile, stop and make it compile, you know, run the test frequently. If the test doesn't run at all, then figure something out, but don't keep writing more code. And by having this space in class where we could start off, it just seems to really clear that up, make people feel better. And I see better results in what comes back to me later.
Nice. One quick question I'll throw in there is, how large was the class? Like how many students? Mm-hmm. And then did you break up into multiple mobs or was it basically one large class mob?
Good question. Also, it is usually I have about 15 students. So it's a big mob. And I would say, let's say the average is 15 students. For the most part, people show up, you know, so it's usually a big group. I have not broken up into multiple mobs because there's only one of me. And I haven't figured out, I'd love to hear from folks tuning in too. You know, if people have suggestions or thoughts on this, I'm totally open to it. I just haven't figured out how to do that. So we work as one whole mob. And what I found is that in the course of that second hour, usually everybody can get one turn driving. Okay. Then we go into the third hour. Usually the third hour, we spend about half of it continuing on our coding. And then by then everybody's wiped out mentally. It's 8:30 PM and people been coding for an hour and a half. They're kind of shot. So then I shift gears and talk about what we're going to study next week. So one big mob, I facilitate it pretty much according to what I learned when I first got exposed to this through a friend who introduced me to Woody Zuhl and got me into some of his mob sessions. So 5-minute rotation, we are working on a branch. So that way we can commit and push to pass and I'm not worried about anything. I do another thing I set up with all of my assignments, all the code I share with them is I have GitHub Actions running a pipeline over it. So I show them, you know, this is an automated build and your goal is really to make it green, not just to make the test pass. So we work on a branch. I found that's also really helpful because we interact with Git just from the command line, which is something I also see as part of my goal for this class is not just the computer science, but also help people understand how to function among coders, whether you're a professional or not. Even if you're going to work on your own projects or you want to share it with people, you need to know how to use the tools and how to communicate. So the mobbing helps with that, but then also after each rotation, we go to the command line, we make a commit, everybody does that together. By the end of 2 or 3 sessions, everybody's developed some muscle memory and can help each other out. So they get a lot more learning on that. And then since we're not going to go through the whole group, I still want to have a retro. I still want that to be part of the experience. So I just watch the clock. And after we go 4 or 5 individuals, then I'll say, okay, let's stop here. And let's have a short retrospective. And I'll just ask the usual questions. How is this going? How does this feel? What can we do differently? And I've been pretty, that's some of the stuff I want to share today too, like some of the observations that have come out from students there.
Nice. Well, Chris, maybe we just jump right into that, right? Yeah. So one of the topics today was the feedback you've gotten from operating that way. So I'm guessing in the retros, you've got student feedback as you're going.
Yeah. I mean, I think I want to share also how I introduce this to people, because that's part of their reaction. I found in this case, I just put it right out there from the beginning. You know, I have it in the syllabus, and then in the first class, I reinforce this is going to be an interactive experience. This is going to be an active experience. So best if you dial in from a comfortable place with a laptop. Sometimes people will dial in from their phone or something like that. And I make it clear, like, that's not really going to work here. You're going to share your screen and you're going to get your hands on the keyboard. So I set it up for them that way. And then when we first code, I even do a short little 5-minute presentation where I'm just like, this is how we're going to work in class. And it's the mob routine that I just laid out. At that point, I don't think I've had anybody express any hesitation about it. People get into it. When we do our retros, the feedback I've gotten, you know, it varies from class to class. One thing is probably the most common thing, and I hear this when I mob with professional colleagues as well. 5 minutes is too short. We need to go longer. This one, I hear this a lot. It's interesting being in the instructor chair on this, because I have a little bit more power to just say, well, no, we're, you know, 5 minutes. I've thought about even maybe dialing down and maybe starting at 3 minutes and see if people decide that's too short, then we could go up to five. But I did have one group where I let them change it. We changed it to 7 minutes. And when we came back around for another retro, people were like, this is really moving a lot more slowly. So we kind of went back to 5 minutes. I thought that was an interesting one. Another experience I remember from one of the retros that I thought was really significant. You know, it's a bunch of students and they're solving a problem and nobody is really an experienced coder. Some people might have some coding experience, but it's all very much beginners. So we might get one person who's really dominating. And this is where I don't, you know, I like to just let the mob handle it as much as they can. So I'll stay back and I'll let it go for one round. And when we have a retro, if no one mentions anything, I might suggest some things like maybe we need to get more voices into this. Maybe we want to try to get more participation but I did have one class where they landed on that on their own. And I thought it was just, I was amazed. I almost wanted to start a company and hire all these people because they came to it. They said, you know, well, we've really seems like we've got one really dominant voice and really gently and with empathy gave this feedback, and the person took it and the rest of the group realized where they needed to chime in too. It's not just the one person not dominate. It's that we need everybody else to participate. And that was one that I thought was really an interesting one.
How did they, so the giving and the receiving feedback can be difficult. I think especially for students, because I don't think students really realize the like social aspects of the industry that they're getting in. Do you feel like maybe they're more prepared for this, or do you see anything from like a level of, you know, people going on to other classes, if there's been any interaction with former students or anything along those lines, just from like a social and empathy level? Or do you know if that impacted it?
That's a good one. I need to think about that and maybe think about what I have heard from that on that particular point. I have feedback that I've gotten from students, both in the mobbing and after, is that they do like the communicating about code. And I have a feeling that might be helping them in other classes as well. They also liked using the tools. You know, I've gotten that a few times, like, okay, this is the first time where I know that GitHub is a thing out there. I didn't really know what it was for or why I would use it. And that, I guess, also related to your question, that's another thing that I think I do try to help them get out of it, is just to understand that this is a social industry you're going into. You know, I present to them GitHub is the social network for people who code right now.
Yeah.
And that's why we're going to use it. That's one thing that you get out of using it. So
Nice. So this is kind of shifting gears away from the feedback piece a little bit. I do want to return to that, but something popped up that I thought may have happened in your classes. So I'm curious how you handled it. So a bit of a story first. Chris and I have been part of kind of, it's like only for a couple hours, once or twice a year, where we mob program remotely with middle school and high school students. And one thing that always comes up, because we do break into multiple mobs in that scenario, is it's now part of like the discussions for all the, you know, engineers who are facilitating mobs with the students. And it's part of the discussion afterwards. So I'm curious on your thoughts on it. What we've observed is sometimes the mob has someone there, like they're in the room remotely, but no camera, no mic, no audio, no response when it's their turn to mob or drive or navigate. Have you ever run into this, and how do you handle it?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's a good question. I tell folks, and I mentioned that I introduce in the syllabus, and on day one, this is an interactive class. On day one, when I'm speaking to it, I say, I'm going to ask a lot of questions, and I'm going to wait for responses. And if I don't get any, I will call on you. So if you're in here, you're going to be called on. I just kind of set that out as the standard, the expectation. And when we're mobbing, those folks who are camera off and not responding, it becomes apparent really quickly. You know, I'd rather have people opt in, but if there are people who are just not responding, I will call on them. I'll just say, you know, Austin, you've been quiet for a while. Why don't you take the next turn driving? And if I met with nothing and it's like, Austin, are you there? Okay, Austin seems to have stepped away. We'll move on to the next one. But also one other piece I mentioned, some of my learning and that another professor guided me on is points are like the currency for students. And I can remember in my own background being that way. So I give part of my grading is participation. And the way I present that is if you're here, you're here and participating, that's great. You get the 5 points a week. But if you're not here and you can't communicate to me why, or if you're here and I call on you and you don't answer and it's clear that you just dialed in and left, then you don't get the points either. And it's enough that it can make kind of get people's attention.
Nice. So it's kind of like Gryffindor is docked 5 points kind of thing. Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. Good. Yeah. Yeah, very good. Yeah, and I think in our scenario, we didn't have a point system, but
yeah,
we did have the teacher who did have a point system, so he would show up in the mob and apply the point system, I guess. So that's pretty interesting. Okay, cool. So I guess returning to feedback, so they like communicating about code, kind of the feedback in these mini retros. There was some back and forth on the mob timer length, which is pretty interesting. They like learning tools as a group. Any other feedback you got from students, either during the retros or just outside of the retros or what have you?
Outside of the retros, because I do try to have, I can't quite do it with each student, but students who are really motivated, I'll make sure I get some one-on-one time with them. And also in reviews, I've just gotten the feedback that people like the coding and they like the input on their coding. Because again, they're used to coding by themselves. They don't even know what good looks like. I think people have also expressed that they like learning, again, on the tools point, learning things like, well, with a tool like Gradle, you can pretty much make a standard Java project. So it's not something that I figure out and it only runs on my machine, but getting to where you are creating something that you can share with someone else and how to share it.
Did you have any moments where like halfway through the class, you decided to change something about the class based on that feedback? Or was it like this, you know, class one affected how it would be for class two? Affected how it would be for class three?
Good question. I can't think of an example, but I feel like I have made some pretty on the fly decisions,
yeah,
you know,
great.
If something's just absolutely not working, because each class is different. And, you know, how they respond to the same assignments is different. That's really been one of the big learnings for me in this as an instructor, is really appreciating how people learn differently.
Yeah.
And how people take the same presentation and can interpret it very differently. The mobbing has helped me have one conversation. So in there, I might get questions that make it, you know, from people's different perspectives, but I find I can answer that question and maybe it helps three or four other people understand something. So we all get it together.
Nice. Yeah, I imagine that my guess, correct me if I'm wrong, is that other teachers or other parts of the school heard about this different style of teaching. If so, did they have any feedback or thoughts, or what were the reactions, if you heard any?
I think so. I haven't heard
okay.
much. I did. I have gotten good feedback from the department. So I get good. I've gotten good feedback from my students and from the department, and they keep inviting me to come back. So I'm taking that as good feedback. What I have been noticing from some of the students is that now they're coming in and they're saying, oh yeah, we used GitHub in this other class that I was in. So I think this may have helped just kind of inject that into some thinking, and I'm not giving myself credit on that. I just think maybe I did it and enough other students started talking to other profs about it, that I'm hearing from other students that other profs are doing something like distributing the work through GitHub, which means the students have to learn how to use it. That's one of the first challenges. You know, in my class, what I was concerned about the first time I went this way was, if I tell people before week one, I want you to install some tools on your machine, set up a GitHub account, put an SSH key in the GitHub account so that you'll be ready to work on this, are they going to be able to do it? Overall, I found that they can. And in each class, my first session, one piece of the first hour is, let's just go over, where did everybody get? Who got Java installed? Most folks can do it. I think the installers and the operating system experience has really developed in recent years too. The one where there will be people will get hung up, and I see experienced professionals get hung up on this, is getting the SSH key to GitHub. So I find it, I walk through that with, get one person to share their screen, and we walk through it for a Mac user and then walk through it for a Windows user. And that seems to clear things up. So I think that, you know, seeing that and then hearing from students that other profs are picking it up is, I think it is starting to take off a bit.
Nice. Well, it might be, you know, kind of talking about the things that you learned from the whole experience. I think that mm-hmm. might be a good point to move on to that.
Yeah.
What are the big takeaways for you, and how has it impacted you going forward?
I think the biggest learning for me has been, again, that point about appreciating how people learn differently. And, you know, an example, I mentioned that we use this ebook called ZyBook, ZyBook. I want to put a link to that in the show notes. It, to me, this is the best thing that could have happened for introductory computer science. Instead of this big textbook, like I remember getting, with a bunch of exercises and you do them on paper and you get no feedback, you could do it completely wrong and not know until the professor graded it. With ZyBook, you have these short chapters and they have exercises integrated in there. So you read the chapter and then you do some coding right there and you get feedback and you can do it 100 times over and it'll even keep giving you minor variations of the problems. So I think this is great. I've had a couple of students who really are troubled by it and really, at first it was hard for me. I was like, how can you not, you know, what am I missing? But then when I started hearing from it, from a few people, I came to just appreciate that this is working well for me in the way I learn, but maybe other folks need to see a video of something or want to read a different kind of book. So engaging with students on this level has helped me learn to listen more carefully at what folks are really telling me. So I'm not just like, oh, Zybook is easy. If you don't get it, that's your problem. Well, no, actually, it's just not pitched at the level, at the place where this person can respond. So that's helped me then listen more and find other resources and share other resources. And that's just helped me overall, definitely helped me as a consultant in my regular work.
Nice. Yeah. And so I see that it's taught you things about appreciating different things for students. Any other lessons learned?
Yeah. Another piece for me professionally, and why I'd recommend this to anybody, if you get the chance and you're interested, I think taking any time you can to teach like this can be a really good professional experience. It's also been a chance to work in the academic domain for a little bit. And being a consultant, I'm used to working in different businesses. And that's part of what I love about a career in consulting, that I get to go and learn new business domains and learn things. Well, I hadn't been hired, I hadn't been contracted by a university department before, but now in this role, I have an email, I am interacting with other professors, I'm communicating through the department and just learning the communication styles, the priorities, the tools, the technology and everything. That's also been really interesting and rewarding for me. There's one more bit of learning I want to share while we have time. The question here among when you're teaching computer science is, should you use an IDE or not? And when I was learning this stuff, I'm even trying to think back. I mean, we kind of used IDEs, but they weren't so compelling at that time. And I do remember learning VI. I wish I had learned Emacs at that time, but I remember VI being presented as a development environment to me and doing that and being able to do that.
Oh no, you started a war in the comments just now.
Yeah, I'm sure. I made the wrong choice. I'll say that. I made the wrong choice. I should have gone Emacs. I went VI, but here we are. Well, now the IDEs have developed so much that my first few semesters doing this, I just couldn't really think of other ways. You know, I wanted people to get more of the professional experience. I thought I want them to use an IDE. And overall, it's worked. But what I've noticed, this is some of the learning for me, is that it's also really baffling to folks who have no idea what they're interacting with. And there's another person I want to credit called Professor Jeffrey Challen wrote a blog entry about this that I think I can find again. And he described it as being in front of an IDE is like being in the cockpit of 747. You have all these buttons and stuff. And if you know how to fly a plane, that's okay. If you don't, it can be really terrifying. What I see happen with the students is they start typing something and the IDE does some autocomplete and it injects a bunch of the wrong imports or a big block of code or something like that. And if you don't know that that was unexpected, maybe you just leave it, or you get confused by it, or you get stopped by it. I like that it brings in and makes it really easy to run your tests and all, but it brings in this other overhead too. So this coming semester, I've decided I'm going to do something different and we're not going to use an IDE at all. Mm. The semester starts next week and I've asked the students this time to just download and install a text editor suitable for coding. And here I'll contribute to the flame wars again. I told them for Windows users, get Notepad++. And for Mac users, I suggested TextMate. And those were just to me based on Notepad++ is what I've always seen Windows users using. And TextMate, after a little bit of experimentation, to me seemed like the minimal smarts version that would still do basic code highlighting and things like that. I want them to have that much. I just don't want them to have IntelliSense and all kinds of other tools that they're never going to use in our class anyway. Mm. So yeah. That's my new thing based on some learning, and we'll see how that goes.
That's certainly a interesting experiment. It reminds me of kind of the fluent edge learning, right? And overwhelm and I think even recently I was talking to a group and they were programming together, and a lot of the people in the group did not have any experience writing code with other people. And so you could tell that certain people got really overwhelmed just even by the interactions and the social aspects. And so when asked for advice, I kind of suggested similar sort of things. It's like, you know, find out where the fluent edge is for people, and make sure that the content doesn't expand into too much new or net new at the same time. And so it can be very useful limiting the net new. I think your suggestion, you know, on the other hand, like, the thing that I'm afraid of is somebody coming out of class, you know, with that older school mentality of, I don't work in an IDE, so I'm smarter than everything.
Right.
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 And so, I think on the opposite end of that, taking care to anchor people so that when they move on from that point, or introduce the IDE slowly, could also be another thing.
I'm thinking about that as well. You know, another thing that I've had success with is when I have time, I will offer to do a lab session outside of class. And I'll try to do this at least once, twice. That's about as much as I can handle in the 8 weeks. But I'll say on a Thursday evening, I can do 2 hours, and whoever can be there can be there. And that's a session where maybe towards the end, I might introduce the IDE and show some things that you can do with it. Or maybe as we get on in the semester, introduce it. One thing I'm not sure how I'll handle is if I get students who show up and are already committed.
Yes. Yeah. And I've seen that in classes too, because so even when I was doing my master's, a lot of the professors did not want people using IDEs. And when students did use them, there was a lot of conflict, and the students using them were like, why would I ever write code without one? And so, yeah, that certainly can be a danger and contentious, but I don't think any professor ever gave me a explanation of the fluent edge and keeping the class baseline and things like that. So it's like, yes, you're right. It is good to use an IDE. However, it might be overwhelming for a portion of the class or something like that could help. But I think that, it's certainly an interesting thing to just layer on the added capability as you move forward, because you're right, you get into the class and you're learning Git for the first time, and Git can be completely consuming of somebody's attention when they see, when they've never written code before. It's like, just how do you even save code?
I had a follow-up question on the IDE thing, because I think we'll sometimes get visitors who have little to no experience coding, and they'll usually join us using, you know, they're in the full cockpit, right? When they're doing production coding with us, they're sitting there in the cockpit with us. And I imagine it would be kind of terrifying if you were alone in the cockpit. Like if I were put in a plain cockpit and said, go, and I'm evaluating you on your grade by how you do, here's the manual, I'd be like, so many buttons, I'm so scared, right? But with the mob, I'm wondering what the impact was in your class, because I'm guessing your prior classes were with the full IDE, is that right?
Right. Yeah, I would just have them use IntelliJ Community Edition.
Okay, gotcha. What was the impact of kind of the mob class on the IDE overwhelmness, if that's a word?
Yeah, the real showstopper that I saw was that thing I mentioned on, you know, the IDE does some auto completion for you. And if you're accustomed to that, you know, it was the wrong thing. You just undo and get it to do what you want. So I think that was the biggest stopper that I saw. When they're mobbing together, I felt like, just like with the other tools, they're pretty good at pointing out to each other, click that thing, you know, look under there. The one piece that I may end up introducing the IDE for is debugging. Because that's another one of the using the tools that I like to help people understand. But I'm thinking this time, maybe I'll just do it with something a little more primitive, like print statements or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, I have thought about this, but and what kind of comes to mind as well is, you know, IntelliJ products, their batteries included for everything, right? And so you have all of the buttons.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, on the opposite end of that spectrum, I think is VS Code, where everything is batteries not included. And so, like, you know, you don't have a debugger for Java unless you install the package. You don't have a you don't have a code formatter unless you install the package. And so, you know, an alternative is that you can use vanilla VS Code and then say, you know, this week we're doing, you know, adding this package. We're adding debugging, and then all of a sudden the debugging button shows up. So that might be an alternative, but yeah, I think just relying on that Fluent Edge thing, but incremental Fluent Edge, right?
You know, that reminds me of another thing I've learned, or I've been aware of and found interesting here. It's really made me aware of the history in our industry.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've heard this feedback often from students in the beginning. There's so many things. You're teaching me Git, you're teaching me Java, you're teaching me Gradle, we're using, and then along with it, as I want them to get basic shell commands, so, you know, open the terminal and show me what directory you're in, change to the next directory, show me what's in this directory, things like that. So then they start to help each other out with the basic commands. And as I'm answering the questions they give me on that, I realize how much of this stuff has grown over time.
Yeah.
You know, so why do we have a program called cat at the shell? It all means concatenate. Well, to my modern ear, that doesn't really make sense. That's not the first word I would think of for what that program does. But if I think back to 1972 and the way people were programming then, okay, it made sense. So now that's part of our vocabulary and part of our toolkit. And it's helped me appreciate and develop some language to express that you can't learn one piece of this stuff without learning little bits of all of it.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of reminded by your story of the, you know, we have an internship program, and at the end of our internship program, you know, we've actually gotten feedback from former interns, just because our environment is one way, but it's quite different. And so, you know, we never have them make estimates. We never, they don't know story points. They don't know other facets of Scrum. So they go and interview at a Scrum shop, and then they're asked to do story point, and they're like, wow, you didn't teach us any of this. And so, we did, in as part of our internship program, we did incorporate a, like, stuff you'll encounter that you didn't see here kind of
That's
lesson.
Good. Yeah.
And that certainly helped, because we've had upset interns that were like, this didn't really prepare me for other companies other than yours. So that was certainly a learning that we got from this sort of thing. So
nice.
I do some of that in my last class session.
Yeah.
Because by that point, we're at the end of 8 weeks, people are pretty wiped out, and I'll make the second half of that class. I don't want to do it as an ask me anything, but I'll do it more as I'm going to share now some more stuff about being a professional in this and how we work. That's also where I will refer back to mob programming. And I've shared somewhere out there, you folks created a Trello board of companies that
mobbed
at whatever time that was done. Yeah. And I really enjoy showing them that, you know, hey, this way we've been working here in class, there are people who do this all the time.
It's awesome. I'm happy to hear that.
Nice.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. So that's really gotten me, this conversation's caused a lesson learned for me, because I really like that cockpit analogy you made, because I think my default way of working is just pulling someone into the cockpit and saying, I know you see 100 buttons, but ignore all of them except this one. You know what I mean? And that can work fairly well. And I think some people like learning that way too. It's like, okay, we're just going to learn this button today, you know? I'm walking away with, you know, that is one way to do Fluent Edge, but you can also give them no distractions and then add one button at a time, right? And
you know, when you put it that way, I think maybe that's part of the skill that we need to develop too, that we all do develop.
Yeah.
Is that as a software professional, you know, what's great about it is you're learning all the time.
Yeah.
It's huge. You could never know everything. And there's more stuff coming out all the time. So part of what you develop as a professional skill is getting comfortable with some ambiguity of like, I understand this much. I don't know what that other stuff is. And I don't care right now.
Yeah.
When I need to, I'll learn it. And not trying to understand what every button does before you feel comfortable operating any of them. With the my plan with the no IDE, I'll follow up with you guys and let you know how it goes. But
yeah,
I still want things like, you know, your code has to be readable to a human. I really stress that a lot. It's been said many times, but code is really more about helping other people understand what you want the computer to do than it is about telling the computer what to do and making it something that you can understand and debug and reason about later. So again, on that Jeffrey Challens advice, I've introduced check style. So now my goal now is not just make the test pass, but actually make the whole build pass. So it'll run the tests. And if you've got things like, you know, missing whatever, it'll flag it. And that's how I want to present it to them this time. So that'll be another little tool that gets added in.
Yeah.
And cool, cool. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts. We're starting to hit our time box. This was wonderful. I just love getting a peek into your world and see, you know, how the next generation is being raised up in your classes. It's very encouraging and exciting. And anything you'd like to share or plug before we close down?
No. Sorry, I should have come prepared with something, but just thank you for having me on. It's been really, really great for me to take the time to prepare for this and really put my reflections together. So I appreciate that. I love the show. I love what you guys are doing.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being a part of community and contributing. We learned so much from you, Karen, and everyone else in the community. So a big shout out and thanks there. And to our audience, please like and subscribe. If you know someone who's, you know, either working with students, you know, in a traditional academic setting, or just working with students or people learning to code in some way, you know, maybe share this episode with them, be inspired like Chris and I are by hearing how Kieran is teaching kids in his class,
students,
something often adults at that age, but. So please share this episode with them. Please like and subscribe. Mom on, and have a good one, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye, everyone.